I actually want to begin this week with a couple of clarifications on things that came up over, I think, mostly last week or the last couple of weeks. So one question that came up, we were talking about using glass dishes for both dairy and meat. So one thing we established that for cold things, it's permissible, but you shouldn't cook shouldn't cook meat and dairy in the same glass dish. But the question that we had not resolved was placing, placing a hot steak on a meat plate. So you're not cooking the steak on that plate, but putting the hot steak on that glass plate. And then also using that same plate for a hot pizza at some point. So I spoke about it with Rabbi Weider, and he thought that should not be done. So even though it seemed like the sources really were talking about cooking, it seems like in general, glass should only be used for both dairy and meat when we're talking about cold. But when we're talking about things that are hot, whether it's cooking or placing them, then that should be avoided. So that was one issue that came up. Another issue that we had started discussing was, let's say you have a sink that's split into two. You have a dairy side and a meat side. And let's say, the water is going to splash from one side to the other. Is that a problem of kashrus? And we said that there's no, the clarification I got is that that's not really a problem, because at best, you're talking about pouring from, it's pouring from a cliche. It's not, at that point, it's not really directly coming. It's not, stuff going directly on the plate, and certainly not the residue that's splashing. So you don't have to worry about water splashing from one side of the sink to the other. The other thing that was subject to a bit of controversy last week, which I still don't have every detail set out here, but we talked a little bit about China plates and whether if 10 years or 30 years pass by, so can one convert those? Can one kosher them? So Rav Moshe Feinstein does have a tshuva where he talks about a case where you have a family of Balei Tshuva. So I think the idea is that Balei Tshuva, so they have China plates and they want to, they still want to use their plates, but they weren't kosher. So can those be koshered? And Rav Moshe said, in that situation, if they wait a year, they could do it if it's a hefsed merubah, if there's tremendous financial loss. So I think each case would have to be, if we go by that tshuva, I think each case really is a case-by-case basis. What's hefsed merubah? What's the need? But the case that Rav Moshe was talking about there was a situation where, talking about Balei Tshuva and questions of financial loss, versus let's say, you're inheriting dishes, but you already have dishes, and the grandchildren, great grandchildren don't necessarily need them, or it's not going to be tremendous financial loss. So I think that that still seems to be
would sentimental loss be included in financial loss? Let's say just a grandfather's plate or something.
It's
case by case.
There's more I want to discuss with Poskim on that front, and that's a good question. And what kind of loss are we talking about here? And maybe if they're sentimental value, so you keep them for display, but use them. I don't know. Okay, right. What I want to discuss this week, and I don't want to rush, but at the same time, I want to keep us moving a bit so that. I have a meeting around 7 o'clock. Probably start late, so either 7:10 or 1. I'm started yet, but what I want to discuss today is the issue of par foods and their interaction with dairy or meat utensils. So this particular shiur that they have here that starts on page 151. So it's really two parts. There's the issue of what we call not bar not. I'll explain what that is. And the issue of sharp foods, of darar charif, onions, lemons, radishes, and the like. So we'll split into those two parts. We'll do the not bar not this week and darar charif next week. But what these two issues have in common is we're talking about parv foods, but when they interact with dairy or meat, what happens?
Is it not by not dairy equipment or meat equipment? Is that what we're talking?
More or less. Okay, so the concept of not bar not is, if I was a really good teacher, actually, I should really write this. I should write this on the board, so to speak, right? So just so we have this out. So I'm going to pull this up one second. Okay, the concept of what we call not bar not is really, it's an abbreviation. Uh-huh. So not bar not stands for no saying Tom bar no saying Tom. So we talked about the concept of no saying Tom is that the essential issue we encounter in kashrus is whether taste is imparted when there's a mixture. So we've talked about dairy and meat directly mixing, but what happens when you have a case where there's taste being given over in like indirect ways, right, on a secondary or even a tertiary level? So the example that Susan asked a question a couple weeks ago, that this is really going to be the core issue that we discuss here, is if I cook pasta in a meat pot, so can I eat that pasta with butter? So that's the situation we're talking about. And the not bar not that we're talking about here is the meat pot giving taste to the pasta. And then, so the question would be, does that pasta inherit the meat taste to the point where if I eat that pasta with the butter, so then that's, you know, is that considered meat and dairy together?
But again, Rabbi, I hate to interrupt, but before you start, there's one thing about giving taste. How do you determine that without tasting it yourself?
Well,
that was what I had asked last time.
Right. One possibility that we had discussed is once upon a time, the halacha was that you could give it to a non-Jew to taste, to see if it imparts taste. But we try not to rely on that. So when it comes to like the pots and pans, so we talked about bata b'shishim, that we assume that if there's 60 times more, it's a dairy dish and a little bit of meat falls in. So if there's 60 times more dairy than meat, we assume that there's no taste here. But one thing that we were taking as a given here is that, let's say I have a meat pot. So we're assuming that if I cook meat in that pot, that meat is imparting taste to the pot. Okay, that's just an assumption, right? So then the question is, does that, because I cooked meat in that pot, does that pot impart the taste back to the pasta? And then once I have that pasta cooked in the meat pot, if I were to eat that with butter or with something dairy, so does that become a mixture of dairy and meat?
You know what would be a good gauge would be the smell.
Right, but again, I don't think we're talking, in some ways, we're not necessarily talking about practical taste. We're talking about about a halachic status. So our goal here is not really to determine if there's actually taste there, because again, we don't want to experiment with that. We want to, but we're assuming halachic status. So again, a meat pot, maybe really, you could argue that, especially, you know, nowadays our cleaning tools are very strong. Yeah. You can argue that a so-called meat pot isn't going to really taste like meat, but we still give it a halachic status of being a meat pot. And that's what's essential here is the potential, is the potential
for Rabbi, it. Doesn't matter if the pot hasn't been used in 24 hours or not.
So that's going to be one thing that will that's definitely going to be one thing that will come up. But let's go through the sources, and I think the examples will become a little bit clearer. So the Gemara in Chulin says, "Itmar dagim she'alu." This is we're on page 151 of source one. Itmar dagim she'alu ba'ke'ara. So you have fish that's hot, and then you put it in a meat bowl. Okay, so fish. Let's say fish was cooked in a parv, in a parv pot or tray or whatnot. Then you take that fish and you put it in a meat bowl. So Rav Amar Asur La'achla Mekuta. So even take that fish off the meat out of the meat bowl, I may not eat it with kutach. Kutach is a dairy dip or dish or something like that. So so the fish is not allowed to be eaten with dairy. Shmuel amar mutar lochlam bekutach. Shmuel says you are allowed to eat that fish with kutach. Again, we're talking about a case here where the fish came in contact with the meat bowl, but the bowl itself didn't have meat in it. It may be imparted, maybe has a potential to part meat taste, but then by the time you're talking about the meat imparting taste to the bowl back to the fish, so does that pose a problem? So Rav says
we're assuming the bowl is cold, right?
The bowl would seem to be cold, but the fish itself is hot. Okay. So Rav says that that's not, you're not allowed to have that with dairy. Shmuel says you're allowed to have it with dairy. And Rav explains the reason is because we assume that it's giving taste, right? The meat bowl is conveying taste to the fish. So therefore, the fish is meat and I can't have dairy with it. Shmuel amar mutter, Shmuel says it's allowed because it's no same tam bar, no same tam hu. That it's secondary taste. Which means that maybe meat imparted flavor to the bowl, but when the bowl imparts taste back to the fish, so it's not really considered to be taste at that point. So Piskiya says the name of Abaye, Hilkasa Dagim Sha'alu Bakara, Mutter Lo'okla Makuta. So I have a principle here that if I have fish, hot fish, that was placed on a meat, you know, on a cold meat bowl, in a cold meat bowl, I'm allowed to take that fish out of the bowl and eat that with dairy, then that's not a problem, right? So if you look in the note here, they explain that the dispute here is whether one can eat hot parf food together with dairy if it was placed on a meat plate. So Rav holds that it's forbidden. Shmuel holds it's permitted since the flavor is imparted only after two stages, right? Meat imparting flavor to the bowl imparting meat flavor to the fish. That is technically permitted because that's not bar nuts. That is, again, a secondary giving of flavor. And that second level, that second stage of imparting flavor makes it a little bit weaker. So
where does it say that you have to eat it with dairy? You have to take it out of the beef bowl.
Well, because then you get, you get into issues of whether you can, you know, eat something dairy in a meat bowl, which we would not do.
Okay.
And then also, what happens to that bowl? Does it change to dairy from meat?
No, because again, you're not eating that fish with the dairy in that meat bowl, right? You're taking
Let's say it's not parva, it's just dairy in meat bowl. Oh, here we're only talking about parva food. Okay.
We're talking about the case where the food is parv and it came in contact with the meat or dairy utensil. So something that is straight halakhically accepted in the Gemara is that parv food that comes in contact with the meat, with the meat utensil, can be eaten later with dairy. But a different question will come up about whether you can cook parv food in a meat pot and then have it with dairy. So that's the question I think that Susan had raised a couple weeks ago. Can I cook pasta in a meat pot and then eat that later with butter? Because in that point, it's not just that the case in the Gemara was that the bowl maybe was cold. It's not, you're not cooking it you weren't cooking the fish in the meat pot. It just came in contact with it. Here we're talking about, can I cook that pasta in a meat. Pan, in a meat pot?
And have it remain parva. Yeah.
Can I have that with dairy? So it doesn't remain parva. So one thing, of course, one thing that we have to explain, because this is going to come up later, is that sometimes in halacha we distinguish between cooking and roasting. Cooking in halachic terms is when you're boiling something in hot water and it cooks that way, as opposed to, let's say, roasting. Tzliya is placing, let's say, like dry potatoes in an oven would be considered, is technically considered roasting, not cooking. Cooking is when you put something in a boiling pot of water. It's one thing we have to note first. Second thing we have to note is that, again, as Susan mentioned, it probably will matter whether the pot in question has been used within 24 hours. So our first discussion here is really about a case where I want to cook pasta in a meat pot that has been used within 24 hours, Can I have that with dairy? So we have three opinions brought in the sources here. Okay, so in source two, on page 152, you have the opinion of Tosfos that the Gemara was only talking about a case where, let's say, the fish or the pasta happened to be in a, you know, in a meat plate or meat bowl. But if it's cooked in a meat pot, so then you can't have that with dairy. So that's what Tosfos brings in the name of Rashi and the Rivan. It's approach number one. Approach number two, brought in the Beis Yosef, is that it doesn't matter. You can cook, roast, whatever. I can make pasta in a meat pot and eat that with dairy. And that is 100% allowed, seemingly. There will be some nuances to come, but seemingly that's allowed. And it, again, doesn't make a difference whether it's cooking or roasting. But
that approach would make it superfluous for people to keep parva pots.
Yes, but we're going to get to the issue of davar charik. So let's say if you're dealing with onions and you really do want that parva pot. But in theory, that would you'd be right that it would make parva pots a little bit superfluous.
Whose opinion is that? Which opinion is that? That you're allowed it, that it's okay.
The Beis Yosef quotes this in the name of a number of Rishonim. Right? So Beis Yosef is actually the antecedent to the Shulchan Aruch. Right? It's written by the same author. So Beis Yosef, before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he took the Gemara and all the Rishonim up to that point and kind of, you know, made an encyclopedia out of them and discussed all the different opinions and in some cases indicated what he thought was halakhically.
But you're going to present different opinions. We need to know how we paskin at the end, right?
Well, right. So, but I'm just saying. So the Beis Yosef brings these Rishonim and seems to agree with them that you're allowed to cook. You're allowed to, you know, cook that pasta in the meat pot and have it with dairy, right? So the Beis Yosef turns into the. By the way, the Beis Yosef does turn into the Shulchan Aruch where he gives you like a much more straightforward bottom line opinion. But that's the second approach. The third approach is a little bit more nuanced. That's the opinion of the Rush. Rush was actually interestingly both. You know, it was originally a German Baal Tosfos, but flees to Spain. So it gets a little bit of the best of both worlds. So he says that you're not allowed to, let's say, you can't put potatoes on a meat tray, put it in the oven, and then have that with dairy. But when it comes to cooking, it is permitted because once you get to cooking, so you have a third factor in the equation, right? So let's say you talk about a meat pot. So we said that, you know, the meat imparts taste to the pot. And in theory, the pot imparts taste to the food. But when you're cooking with water, so you have a third factor there. Meat's giving taste to the pot, the pot's giving taste to the water, and then the water would be imparting taste to the pasta in our example. So for the Rush, If you're cooking something, you know, in a boiling pot of water, so in that case, that pasta can be eaten with dairy. So if you look on page 154, it actually gives you a summary of the different opinions. Again, you have the Rivan citing Rashi and Tosos that you can't cook a parv item in a meat pot and then use it and then eat it with dairy. The Rush says that you can't put something in the oven in that fashion, but cooking is fine. And the Rambam, another Rishonim, as quoted by the Beis Yosef, says that it doesn't really matter. Something that's parv, even if it was put in a meat pot, can be used with dairy. So the Ran clarifies that... he says that Rabbi Yehuda Shalosh Arina not bar not Ella Bishal Hatter. It has to be that that we're talking about cases where everything independently is permitted. So, for example, you can't again, you can't cook, you can't put cheese. Let's think of a good example. You can't make a French onion soup in a meat pot and say that it's not Barnat, that it's no sin tam bar no sin tam, because then you're getting an issue of actually mixing dairy and meat together, right? There has to be that separation between the dairy and the meat.
Yeah, but then you got the onions a problem, right?
Okay, so forget the onions for a second. But my point is that you can't, that not Barnat is only allowed when everything independently is permitted, right? But you can't use that argument to, you know, to put dairy, to cook dairy in a meat pot and say that, well, it's only a secondary flavor transfer, right? It has to, there has to be that separation. So the Shulchan Aruch rules in source 6 that dagim shenisbashlu o shenitzlu b'kedera shel basar rechutza yafa. So if you have fish that is cooked or roasted in a dairy pot or pan, which is washed meat in a meat pan, which is washed very well, okay, because it's important here, obviously, that there's, again, we're assuming that there's no actual meat in the pot. So
that's what we're assuming all the time. That's
correct. But we're just underscoring that point. So mutter the ochlam bekutach. So I'm not gonna have that with dairy. Mishum davin nosim tambar nosim tam de heterim. Right, it's a secondary flavor transfer that is permitted.
Right.
Okay, but he says it's not. It would not be allowed, obviously, if the pot or the pan is not washed well. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch rules. But remember, Shulchan Aruch is fundamentally Sephardi. So for Ashkenazim, the Rama comes in and says, "Ish machmir mitzliyah bishul lesser nosin tam bar nosin tam." There's some who forbid one from cooking part of in a meat pan and then using that with dairy. So he says, minhag lesser lechatila u'dievan mutzar b'chol inyan. So the minhag is that ideally we should not be doing that, but after the fact, it is permitted. B'daka lechol imukalav basar atzbo. So let's say, so I shouldn't, what I can't do, according to the Rama, is that I can't cook the pasta in a meat pot with the intention that I'm later going to put butter or cheese on that. That would be problematic. After the fact, I already did it. So in that case, it would be it would be permitted to eat. But ideally, I should not cook it together with the intention of eating it. Right, but to cook pasta in a meat pot and then to put that pasta in a dairy plate without there being actually dairy on it, that's definitely fine, according to the Rama. Right? But the Rama says that ideally should not eat that pasta like with cheese or with butter, but I could put that pasta on a dairy plate.
These kalim that you're putting it on, they don't change their status.
Correct. Right. We're saying it's permitted. Right, so the Shach clarifies in source 8 that that the pasta cooked in the meat pot, so ideally should not eat with a dairy product. But if I did put it together with, you know, if I did put that pasta together with butter or cheese, so at that point I'm allowed to eat it. With that said, if we look on page 156, so there's a little bit of a further limiting of the Shulchan Aruch's circumstances. So the Shach explains that lebashlan lechatchila b'der shel basar kidei l'ochlan mekutach asar filu mechaber v'siyato. The Shach claims that you're really not allowed to cook the pasta in a meat pan with the express intention of eating it with dairy. It's like this. The Shulchan Aruch is saying, in theory, that you shouldn't cook. One way of looking at this is the Shulchan Aruch is saying that you shouldn't cook pasta in a meat pot with the express intention of having it with dairy. If you did cook it, then you're allowed to eat it with the dairy. Whereas the Rama is saying that that I shouldn't, let's say I cook the pasta in the meat pot, so then I should not lechatchila put that pasta with butter or cheese. But if I did add cheese or butter to my pasta, then I'm allowed to eat it. So different degrees here. What are different stages here, right? There's the intention when you're cooking it. There's intention of, you know, when I've already cooked it and I'm thinking of adding cheese or butter, am I allowed to do that? And then there's the final stage, like once I already put the cheese or butter, am I allowed to do that? So the Shach claims that the Shulchan Aruch does not allow you to purposely cook pasta in a meat pot to eat with dairy. You're only allowed to do that if you already cooked it, then I'm allowed to lechatchila put the cheese or butter on. So Rav Avadia Yosef says that no. And the Yakud Yosef, he says no. You are allowed to cook pasta in a meat pot and have that with cheese or dairy. And you can do that purposely, intentionally. But the Ben Ish Chai and Mordechai Eliyahu agree with the Shach that one should not cook pasta in a meat pot and then with the express intention of having that with dairy. So all of this up to this point has been talking about when the meat pot is ben yomo, when it's been used within 24 hours. Okay, but what happens if the pot was not used within the last 24 hours? It's eno ben yomo. So in that case, the taste that's being imparted is nosin tam lifgam. It's not a favorable taste. So the Rama writes in source 12, imaya klish nispashlu onitzu bo lifgam shelo ya ben yomo. So what I am allowed to do, if I cook pasta in a meat pot that has not been used within 24 hours, I am allowed to purposely put cheese or butter on that pasta and eat it. Okay? I should say a little bit differently. I'm allowed to, if there is cheese or butter put on that pasta, then I'm allowed to eat it, no problem. So the Chachmas Adam takes the position that the Ramah does not mean that you're allowed to cook meat in a not ben yomo pot with the express intention of eating the dairy. You're just allowed to eat it unless you, for some reason, don't have any other option. Whereas the Vilna Gaon says that in a non ben yomo pot, right, a pot that has been used within 24 hours, I am allowed to cook pasta in a meat pot, and have that with dairy. So the Sefer Kashrus summarizes that, and this is source 15 on page 158, concerning a meat utensil that is not ben yomo, has not been used within 24 hours. So some say that it is forbidden lechatchila to cook a par food in it in order to eat with dairy food. I shouldn't purposely cook the meat pasta in the par pasta in the dairy pot to eat with dairy, except in cases where there's no other utensil suitable for this type of cooking. Okay. The last thing to discuss for tonight, the 7 minutes and 20 seconds that I have left on the Zoom clock, is washing dairy and meat utensils together. What's the situation there? So in source 16, page 159, okay, arosha basar shehutku biyore cholev is b'chamin shayat zol esben. So let's say you're washing a meat dish in a dairy basin. So if you're allowed to do that even if they've been used within 24 hours, because whatever taste is being imparted is secondary. It's not like you're you know, you're washing the meat pot with cheese, right? We're assuming, as the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, that they're both clean. So in that case, I can put a meat pot inside a dairy pot while I'm washing the dishes with hot water, and that's not a problem. The Ramah says that even if the dishes are mostly clean, you cannot wash meat pot inside a dairy basin, or you can't, shouldn't wash them together, unless one of them has not been used within 24 hours. So the Taz, one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, learns out from here. I read this in English, source 17. If water or vegetables are cooked in a dairy pot that is ben yomo, that has been used within 24 hours, and then I put a meat spoon in that that dairy pot, so they render each other forbidden, even if they are both clean well, right? So this is, you know, one of those cases. I use the dairy, I put the dairy pot and the meat pot. So let's say I'm cooking part of in that meat pot, but I put it's a dairy pot. So let's say I'm using a dairy pot to cook vegetables, which are parv, but if I put a meat spoon in there, then the pot and the spoon become problematic if they were both used within 24 hours. If they're not used within 24 hours, then they don't have a problem. So if you look on page 160, again, there's kind of a lot of information flying here.
Yeah, it's too much.
So
overload. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So let's break this down to summarize. Okay. So we have different cases here. So part of a food cooked in a ben yomo meat dish, right? It's been used within 24 hours. For Sfaradim, that may be eaten with dairy. For Ashkenazim, it should not be eaten with dairy lechatchila, unless, you know, they were already, if the pasta was already mixed with the cheese, even though it was cooked in that meat pot, so then I can eat it, but I shouldn't do that on purpose. So that was case number one. Case number two, so if I cook parv in a meat dish with the intention of eating it with dairy, so Ashkenazim do not allow this. The Ben Ish Chai also does not allow it, but Rav Ovadia Yosef does allow that. Okay. Cooking parv in a non-ben yomo part, right? So it hasn't been used within 24 hours with the intent to eat it with dairy. So for Sephardim, that's definitely permitted. For Ashkenazim, that's a machlokas, whether you should do that. So for Ashkenazim, if I cook parv in a pot that has been used within 24 hours with the intention to eat with dairy, I really shouldn't do that. But once I've already done it, or if I don't have another pot, then it's permitted. And finally, if I have a dairy spoon that I put in a meat pot with par food, so for Sephardim, that's allowed, and for Ashkenazim, everything is problematic.
What about the pot?
What?
The last case, what happens to the pot? It stays
also,
meat?
Pot needs to be kosher.
It has to be kosher?
Okay, so again, for Ashkenazim, the basic rundown here is that if I want to, you know, again, this was all sort of raised in a question that Susan asked a couple weeks ago. So in this long-winded way to answer this,
apologize for the trouble.
No, I'm saying this is a sugya here. So I'm glad you asked that question because it gave me a good example to run off of. So. For Ashkenazim, I should not cook pasta in a meat pot with the intention of having cheese or butter with it. But if I did that, and let's say I already added the cheese, then I'm technically allowed to eat it. If that pot was not used within 24 hours, I still also should not cook that pasta in the meat pot with the intention of using with dairy. But if it hasn't been used within 24 hours, so then I am allowed to eat that with dairy. So that's the basic point here.
What if you don't mix it with dairy, or can you have a cup of coffee with?
Yeah. So I think there you don't really have a problem, right? That's what we call the concept of, you know, maybe it's the. We're talking about like expressly mixing the pasta with the with the butter, but absent that, so you could have coffee with that.
Not after together.
And together, I mean, should you put it in your mouth at the same time? But like in between bites, seems like it's not a problem.
And airplane foods where it says meat equipment. And they serve you a cup of coffee with that. It's parva, but it's meat equipment.
That's okay, so maybe not, you know, the same, you know, in the same bite, but in between.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any final questions?
Can I just tell you how the problem came up with me? Is that sometimes I'll make, let's say I'll boil pasta in a meat pot to have as a side dish for a meat meal, but I have leftover.
Yeah.
And I put leftover in the fridge. And the next day I want to have that leftover pasta for lunch on a dairy plate. And I don't put butter on it, but on a dairy plate. And I'm going to have it with a piece of cheese on the side, or I want to have it with a coffee or something like that. And that was why the question came up.
Right. So we're talking about like... next day. Right, so we're talking about like, you know, on a dairy plate and you're having like cheese on the side or whatever. So like that's one thing. And also if you happen to cook it for a meat meal, but then you happen to have leftovers, so that's, you know, that's all those factors there make a difference.
That's all how right. It always comes up for me. That's the whole reason the question came up. Thank you.
All right, we're about to be kicked off by Zoom, but wishing everyone a good night and thanks for
thank you very much, Bradley.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night, everybody. Good night.